In 2016, Utah lawmakers came really close to abolishing the death penalty in the state. A bill to make the maximum sentence for a crime life without the possibility of parole passed out of a Senate committee, and then the full Senate. Then, by a slim margin, it made it out of a House committee, so it only had to pass the full House of Representatives to make its way to the governor's desk for a signature or veto. That the bill was getting so close to passing was all the more surprising because just the year before, lawmakers had made it legal, once again, to execute a person by firing squad if lethal drugs were not available. At the last minute, though, the bill to eliminate capital punishment in the Beehive State was pulled because its sponsor couldn't secure the votes he needed. Conservative lawmakers just weren't ready to get rid of killing someone in the name of justice. Fast forward 2 years, and the push to abolish the death penalty is up for debate again on Utah's Capitol Hill. But this time, it's got the support of some powerful lawmakers.
Now, this bill has traditionally, I would argue, and this is just me speaking, has been seen as maybe a left-leaning endeavor. It has been seen as a liberal bill, so to speak, maybe soft on crime. But I stand here today as a supporter of Representative Froehr's bill as a staunch conservative.
This is In the Hive. I'm Emily Means. You just heard Utah House Speaker Greg Hughes at a press conference on Tuesday morning. The Draper Republican explained why he was throwing his support behind the renewed measure.
If we look at the issue of the death penalty and giving our government the right to execute citizenry in heinous crimes, in situations of heinous crimes, for a conservative who understands that government can make mistakes, is not perfect, certainly isn't perfect in everything that it does, it should bring us pause that kind of penalty is available, and that if, in fact, government is not perfect, then inevitably and statistically, government would get it wrong. And that's something that I don't know that we should all be comfortable with. The other issue for me personally is I've watched these death penalty cases, and after someone's found guilty of a crime by a jury, they have in a death penalty case something they call the sentencing hearing. If the sentencing hearing has nothing to do with whether someone committed the crime or not, because the jury has actually found this person guilty already, then what you see is an exercise where the victim's family stands before the jury or testifies before the jury asking for justice to be served. Then you have the person who's been convicted, their family, step before that jury and ask for mercy. And what it amounts to for me is a popularity contest, or who would that jury necessarily identify with? Would they identify with the person found guilty of the crime, or would they identify with the family who is asking for, in some cases, the death penalty? That process becomes one that is not even-handed. So I think that, and again, if you think we're soft on crime, I don't know if Representative Gage Froehr believes this, but let's put them in pink jumpsuits and let them break rocks all their living days. I don't care. But at least you're not going to get it wrong. At least you can take it back if you did it the wrong way.
Again, that was House Speaker Greg Hughes. House Bill 379, sponsored by Representative Gage Froehr, a Republican from Huntsville, would prohibit the state from seeking the death penalty for aggravated murder committed after May 7, 2018. If enacted, the 9 people currently on Utah's death row would not be exempt from the death penalty. 2 years ago, Froehr opposed abolishing the death penalty, but this time around, he says he's considering it from a different angle.
I think as we look at any policy in this state, we have to examine the research, the data, and really the reason behind a certain policy, whether that benefits the public or whether it does not benefit the public. I think it's very clear that this, as we exist today, is not good public policy. It's inefficient, it's very expensive, and it, as the speaker very eloquently said, it puts co-victims in a situation where they are basically at mercy for over 20 years as we go through these appeal processes. Just as a way of information, and the recent report from Criminal Justice that points out that in the last 20 years, the state of Utah has spent $40 million And that $40 million was spent on two sentences with two executions. We have to ask ourselves, is that a good use of taxpayer dollars? In my opinion, as a conservative in this state, I feel that we can put that $40 million in other areas that will benefit the public far more than what we see today in the existing system. Also, I think we'd also agree that we have an inefficient system, not by what the state legislature has done, but what the Supreme Court and at the national federal level we've seen, the delay these executions out many, many years, again, that puts the co-victims at risk. It puts the perpetrator in the press, puts his or her face on the media, and they try to grab the attention. In my opinion, it's far better to put these people, let them bust rocks, like the speaker said, keep them out, let the victims have a resolution to this. Let the co-victims that are family members have a resolution, get over this. They want to get on with their lives. Right now, we're not allowing to do that. The other point that I think is important is that in the last number of years, 160 people in the United States have been on death row and they've been exonerated. Can we take the price that we put, execute one innocent person with the hopes that we are going to maybe get it right? Again, I agree that I don't think it's the government's right to take life. As we look at our pro-life stance, let's be pro-life from the firstborn to the existing people that we have in our society. If you're either pro-life, in my opinion, or you're not. I think this gives us a time. This is Utah values, pro-life. It's economic policy that we look at, and it's basically, at this point in time, in my opinion, it's the right thing to do.
That was Representative Gage Froer, the sponsor of HB 379. Another conservative who's reconsidered his stance on the death penalty, Governor Gary Herbert. Here's Herbert at his monthly press conference.
You know, I've been a strong supporter of the death penalty for those most egregious and heinous of crimes. I think society does have the right to say we're going to eradicate you from our society, and so the death penalty is appropriate. That being said, I think that the court system itself has made it so it's a little bit harder to defend a death penalty. It takes so long. You know, justice delayed is justice denied, a cliche we've used. And when you find people that are tried on a capital punishment, 20, 25 years and longer, people on death row for over 20 years, that's not timely, and that's probably not just. Not only is it unfair for those who are being prosecuted, but I think it's really unfair and unjust to the victims, as that constantly, the appeal after appeal after appeal ad nauseum, kind of reopens the wound that they have to live with. So I'm to the point of saying, for the taxpayer and for justice, it certainly is less expensive, I think, by all accounts, to have life without possibility of parole as a replacement for the death penalty. And so I'm going to take a very hard look if that passes through the legislature, and it's certainly something I would consider signing.
Governor Herbert, does the possibility that someone who is innocent could conceivably end up being executed weigh on you or play into your calculus on supporting or not supporting that bill?
Well, it certainly is a factor, I think, that needs to be considered. I think our judicial system is such that it's very rare. Doesn't mean it hasn't ever happened. I think it's very rare today as opposed to yesteryear, when probably our judicial system was not as thorough. And there was not as many appeals to make sure that people were found guilty, really were guilty. But it certainly eliminates that point of error. But it does introduce the fact of life in prison without the possibility of parole. And I expect the other challenge will be, if we go to that as a sentencing, that people are going to say, I've been in prison for 30 years. I've been a model prisoner. I ought to now have the ability to be paroled. And that's where there's going to be some rub. People are going to say, we did away with the capital punishment and exchange it for life without possibility of parole, and it should be then without possibility of parole. So it's still going to be, I think, some debate and discussion as far as what's going to be the right process and what's going to be the right outcome. But I think we're to the point where having a discussion on life sentence without possibility of parole as a replacement for capital punishment is timely.
On Wednesday, the bill passed out of the House Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice Committee on a 7-4 vote. But not everyone is on board. One longtime outspoken proponent of the death penalty is Representative Paul Ray, a Republican from Clinton. It's a topic he feels very strongly about. Ray has run multiple bills relating to capital punishment, including the one bringing back the firing squad as an option for execution. I met with him at his office in the Utah Capitol to get his take on this recent attempt at abolishing the death penalty. And Representative Ray, I want to talk a bit about the death penalty. Representative Gage Froer is proposing legislation this session to abolish the death penalty in Utah, and House Speaker Greg Hughes is behind him. Of course, they're both Republicans, and they've both changed their minds on the death penalty. They kind of cited a few different reasons. One, that government makes mistakes, potentially resulting in a wrongful execution, and on top of that, it's expensive. You're a Republican.
Right.
Are those persuasive arguments to you?
You know, they're not, and there's a lot of incorrect information about those arguments. You know, first of all, cost. It's actually cheaper to do the death penalty than it is to do life without parole. And the numbers haven't been vetted. We actually just passed legislation to request an audit for those numbers. But when they vetted those numbers, they didn't vet the fact that you have a lot of cases that are pled out so that it doesn't even go to trial because of the death penalty. You know, you say you're going to get the death penalty, you can plead guilty, take life without parole. They'll take life without parole, save the cost of a trial for that. And then you talk about appeals. There are appeals for the death penalty, but they're limited. It's unlimited for life without parole. And the other part is end-of-life care. When you have an inmate, we're required by the Supreme Court to provide optimal health care for our inmates. So when you have an inmate who's dying of cancer or at end stages of life where we have to have kidney dialysis, it's very expensive, millions of dollars a year for one inmate to take care of the end-of-life care. So those are numbers that we're going to have vetted in the study we've asked for, because the $1.6 million they're floating is completely incorrect because they didn't take any of that into account.
But that number comes from Utah legislative fiscal analysts.
That number was put together in about 2 weeks, and they were said, just look at these things. Because I actually talked to the fiscal analyst and the Ledge Research people, and they said, oh yeah, we didn't account all these because we weren't asked to. They accounted for what they were asked to account for.
So we're hoping for new numbers, more thorough numbers from, what is this, Representative Handy's bill?
Representative Handy's bill.
Okay. You ran a bill on the death penalty and human trafficking in 2016. You ran one in 2015, bringing back the firing squad. So I'm wondering why, from your perspective, is the death penalty necessary in some circumstances?
It's justice. You know, we have victims that we never talk about in these bills. We always talk about the people on death row, the monsters on death row. They're not even people. These are monsters that are out there. And they forfeited any control they had over their lives when they killed the victims that they killed. And if you sit and take time and talk to those families of those victims, they're all the families in Utah that have, you know, that were victims of the people that are on death row, they support the death penalty. There was a lady that they brought in today during committee, and she testified that she was family. Well, they're from Georgia. They're not even from Utah. The murder happened in Georgia. Everything happened in Georgia, not Utah. So, you know, Utah is a little bit different. I believe in justice. I don't think sometimes you can put a dollar amount to getting true justice for people.
Well, referring back to something that Speaker Greg Hughes brought up in the press conference this week, he was talking about, you know, government making mistakes, and some might argue that the criminal justice system is flawed in some ways. So what do you think about the potential, however slim it might be, that an innocent person is sentenced to death?
Here in Utah, I think it's not even an argument. It doesn't happen. We have 9 people on death row. None of those 9 people are appealing based on innocence. They've all admitted their guilt. If you look back, and since I think it was 1972 when we reinstated the death penalty, nobody from that point has ever appealed in Utah on the basis of innocence. They've all admitted guilt. It's all technical appeals. You know, my attorney was an idiot kind of an appeal, but nothing to do with their innocence. So I don't buy that argument. We have technologies today, DNA testing, and all those things that are pretty accurate, and the fact that Utah has the highest bar to get on death row here. Currently, Texas has 268 inmates on death row. We have 9. You know, our last execution was in 2010. We don't do it very often. We reserve that for the monsters that are in our society that need to be removed.
Going back to Representative Froer's bill then, Do you plan on actively opposing it? What are you thinking? Where are you sitting?
No, absolutely. I'll lead the charge on the fight against that bill. We took off on it in committee today. Like I said, there's a lot of information given in committee that just doesn't really account for Utah. And so we'll continue to fight that. We'll bring the families of the victims up to talk to legislators. I don't see that bill passing out of the House.
Really?
Yeah.
This is the second attempt, right?
Senator Urquhart 2 years ago had a bill, and it passed the Senate, came to the House, and we killed it. Even the sponsor withdrew from the bill after we presented the accurate facts.
Maybe you can kind of walk me through that process. So, you're listening to these different testimonies on one side or the other. How does that play into your decision when it comes to capital punishment?
The ultimate decision for me is the victims. What did those victims go through, and what's the wishes of their families? And, we talk about the death penalty, but, one thing that's not being talked about also is when you have a monster who we put in prison for the rest of his life without the possibility of parole, but without the possibility of the death penalty, they can kill at will in prison. They will continue to kill other inmates. They'll attack guards because there's nothing at all that we can do to those people, nothing. And former Representative McKiff, Kay McKiff, who was a judge, made that point when the bill was up a couple years ago, that he had an incident in Gunnison where I think it was like 27 times this inmate stabbed a guy in the shower because he just thought that because he was already sentenced for life without parole, he could do what he wanted to. Now, we were able to go back and look at the death penalty for that person, but this is a deterrent. I don't care what you say, it's still a deterrent because anybody who's ever been put to death has never committed another crime.
I can't argue with that. It is very final, right? It's a very permanent form of justice.
Exactly.
Let's talk about public opinion. The Pew Research Center reports that nationally, support for the death penalty is decreasing among Democrats and Republicans, and the same state commission that put forth the cost of the death penalty here in Utah analyzed polls that suggests the same thing for Utahns. So if it is abolished and Representative Frower's bill passes, what do you envision as the consequences of that?
Well, I think you'll see an increase in attacks and deaths on correctional guards. I think you will see an increase in cost of housing these individuals. You will see unlimited appeals. Everybody will go to trial now because there's no reason to plea. If the maximum you're going to get is life without parole, and that's what it's going to be, why not? There's not a reason to plea down. So you're going to see an increased cost of trials, probably 3 to 5 a year, that will go full on, and just unlimited appeals, and like I say, unlimited attacks. It really is a deterrent in a lot of ways. It may not stop somebody originally murder is a crime of passion. They don't think about the end results, but once you get into the system, and you're sitting in prison and you think that you're scot-free to do whatever you want now, having that death penalty over your head is a big deal. And so it may not be out on the streets, but it is certainly behind bars, a deterrent.
Are you planning, since I know this is an issue that you're passionate about, are you planning any other sort of death penalty-related legislation?
Well, I've got felony fleeing right now in a Senate committee. I know the chair doesn't like it too much, but it's a predicate for murders when you flee from police officers and kill somebody. Right now the law is you have to show intent to murder that person with a vehicle, but the way a lot of police departments have gone to a no pursuit policy for public safety reasons, so which I honestly disagree with. I think the police at certain points need to pursue, but criminals now know they can run. All they have to do is run, and the police will stop chasing. And we're going to see a lot more incidences of grandmothers, mothers, children, dads being killed because of people fleeing, and so we need to have that as a predicate offense so that people understand if I run from the police and I kill somebody, I could be facing the death penalty.
Well, Representative Paul Ray, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Representative Ray stands firmly in favor of the death penalty, but coming up on the other side of the issue in opposition to capital punishment are organizations such as the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake, Utah conservatives concerned about the death penalty, and the American Civil Liberties Union of Utah. Representative Ray said the argument that an innocent person might be sentenced to death isn't a fair concern in Utah, but I asked Marina Lowe, Legislative and Policy Counsel for the ACLU of Utah, how many people have been exonerated from death row?
So in the United States, there have been over 160 people who have now been exonerated off death row, which is really a staggering amount if you consider that that means people were actually spending time faced with the threat of their life being taken away, who in the end turned out to be entirely innocent. And so that's one of the real failings of the death penalty, is that it is an ultimate and final sentence that is meted out in a system that we know is, you know, created and run by human beings who make mistakes. So that's, I think, one of the most troubling aspects of the death penalty.
How common are wrongful convictions when it comes to these capital punishment cases?
Well, just generally speaking, I can say that there are problems with reversals and with errors all the time in the criminal justice system, and specifically with the death penalty. I think one of the main reasons for that is, as a whole, we tend to underfund our public defense systems. That's certainly the case here in Utah. The ACLU is actually suing the state of Utah because we're not meeting our Sixth Amendment requirement to provide people with adequate counsel. And the problem is when you don't have adequate counsel by your side, there tend to be errors. And when there are errors, then, of course, there are reversals and there are appeals that go on longer and longer. So, you know, not only do you run the problem of potentially entrapping somebody in the criminal justice system when they're in fact innocent, even for those who might not be innocent, we tend to have these cases expand in terms of the time that they take to be completed because we have these errors and there are reversals and appeals that come from those errors.
Well, you mentioned 160 exonerations from death row. Are improvements in science and technology making these exonerations more frequent?
I wish I could say that that would be the case. The reality is that there is actually DNA evidence available only in a small fraction of most cases. So while it's true that we do have advances, technologically speaking, in terms of DNA that are very useful in the cases where there is DNA evidence available, the vast majority of cases, this type of evidence just isn't even available. And so really won't help in the slightest bit in terms of making sure that we get it right.
Well, one of the arguments for having the death penalty is it serves as a sort of deterrent for crimes. Do you know if there's any evidence of this? Is this a useful tool for prosecutors?
All of the evidence I've seen speaks to the contrary. I've talked with prosecutors who have said that they've actually interviewed individuals who were sentenced and looking at the death penalty and asked whether the consequence that they would be facing factored in at all at the time that they were committing their offense. And universally, the answer is no. I think that really squares with sort of our understanding of most crimes as they're happening. People are motivated by all sorts of things. They're motivated perhaps by the drugs that they're on when they commit a crime, by anger, by passion, all sorts of different things. But most people aren't quickly looking at the code and figuring out whether this particular situation I might find myself in, whether that constitutes an aggravating factor, and thus I might be looking at the death penalty. I just don't think that is really a reasonable assumption for us to make.
So they're not thinking about the consequences of their actions anyway?
No, no. And you know, I guess, you know, sort of a follow-up to that, I think, is also, you know, we sort of understand that for something to be a deterrent when we're talking about criminal justice, and maybe this even works when you're talking about punishing your own child at home, there needs to be sort of a swift and certain sentence. If you commit a wrongdoing and then wait 30 years for that consequence to actually be applied, it's hard to see that really as having much deterrent effect. And that's really what's happening with the death penalty right now in the state of Utah.
There was something that I was reading. I was kind of doing a bit of research on the ACLU's website, and it seems to me that the crimes that constitute, you know, the death penalty are kind of variable. Can you speak to that at all? How does a prosecutor determine what crimes are fit for the death penalty?
Well, actually, the prosecutor doesn't determine that. It's supposed to be determined by the legislature. Code. And so we do have a piece of code in our statute that sets forth all of the aggravating factors under which a prosecutor can seek the death penalty. One of the arguments that we have raised both this year and in previous years is that our current aggravating factor statute has grown. Each year there is, you know, an attempt by a legislator to add to our aggravating factor statute, perhaps because there's a particular circumstance they want to address. But the reality is we now have so many aggravating factors that could potentially qualify somebody for the death sentence, that there is virtually no murder that could be committed in the state of Utah that wouldn't qualify you for the death sentence. And the problem really lies in the fact that When we talk about capital punishment, the idea is that it's supposed to be reserved for the very worst of the worst types of crimes. And if there is virtually no murder that could be committed that couldn't qualify you for the death penalty, then we're really injecting into this a lot of discretion on the part of prosecutors to decide whether in this case they're going to seek the death penalty rather than another. And that sort of discretion, I think, is troubling, right? I mean, that in that circumstance, you can have differences from one county to the next, depending on a prosecutor's politics, could depend on the quality of defense attorney that you have, could depend on the color of your skin, the color of your victim's skin, all of these different factors that might mean that two similarly situated cases are treated differently in terms of the consequences that are sought by a prosecutor.
Well, I know that another argument for having the death penalty is, you know, it gives the families of victims some sort of peace of mind. And of course, the ACLU takes a strong stance against capital punishment. Have you heard this from victims' families? Is this what they think justice should look like?
So obviously, I can't speak on behalf of victim family members. Unfortunately, they have the authority and credibility none of us want on this particular issue. But I will say that I think their positions are not always uniform, and it really depends on the family in terms of what they want. What I will say is that I have spoken with some victim family members who have waited a very, very, very long time to have these sentences fulfilled. And while I can't speak on their behalf, it seems like that sort of hollow justice to be promised something and then wait for such a long time and to not have closure and to sort of spend those intervening years connected in some way to the person who committed the worst wrong upon their family. To have to relive those moments over and over again during appeals and have the media sort of shine a bright light on them each time these cases are revived or have a new iteration in the courts. And so, you know, on the opposite hand, if we have life without parole as the only option, then that's a much shorter, simpler process and sort of is resolved and with certainty in a much smaller period of time.
Okay, Marina, I think we'll wrap there, unless there's anything you want to add on Representative Froehr's bill.
Simply that it's just a really courageous piece of legislation. We're excited to see it move forward, and we're excited to see conservatives really gravitating towards this issue and understanding that it really sort of echoes a lot of very sound conservative principles.
That was Marina Lowe with the ACLU of Utah. Where do you stand on the death penalty? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.